And welcome back, Veta Runners, to another exciting podcast. On this week's podcast, Britain's best kept secret and one of the biggest names in ultra running, Tom Evans. Tom Evans is a former Welsh Guards captain, now runs professional for a living. Under his belt, he's got a third place finish in Marathon de Sables, which he done as a bet. That then obviously kick-started his career. He also has a third place finish in Western States, finishing in under 15 hours. Tom has also won the infamous CCC in France. Also won the South Downs Way. Tom is not only an extremely good ultra runner, Tom has run a 13 minute 40 something 5k and has also run for Great Britain in the World Half Marathon Championships, running 63 minutes. Tom then went on to try and qualify for the Tokyo Olympics before pulling out with an injury. Tom joins me today and we talk through mindset, his training, his plans, his transition from the military into professional athlete. We also answer some questions from you guys. So if you do like this video, this podcast, then please do give it a thumbs up. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel. Right, yeah. Veteran runners, welcome back. Today on the podcast, we've got not only a former soldier, but turned professional athlete, Tom Evans. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, how are you? Nice to finally see you.
Yeah, good. To be honest, I've been trying to reach out, or I was planning to reach out for you for a while. Obviously, the link is there with Vet I Run On, you being ex-Welsh Guards. So I think it's a perfect step to start or kickstart the podcast series with yourself, really. So first, before we start, obviously, we know that there's a few races that you could have been in lately that you haven't been, and that's because of injury. Do you want to discuss what's going on with your injury at the moment?
It's been such a frustrating one. I know everyone will have their own examples of this. And I think for me, as a professional athlete, being able to share my injury and how I'm getting better from it, I think is really important. So I guess I've rewinded a little bit. In February, my knees have never been great. They were never great when I was serving. I found of just taking a knee incredibly uncomfortable a lot of the time. So I ended up just in sort of anti-aircraft position with my Bergen right back as much as I could. So, and using my knees as an excuse. And yeah, after every long race I've done, my knees have always been a little bit sore for a little bit of time after. So if I ever get any niggles, it's normally around my knee and my calf. And things sort of just through lockdown sort of started getting a little bit more difficult and not getting as much physio as I would normally get. And what ended up happening is my IT band just got super tight, which was then pulling in my knee. I then developed a stress response in my fibula head just due to tight IT bands. And that stress response would have turned into a stress fracture and then a fracture had the IT band not been loosened off. So after lots of MRI scans and seeing two different specialists, both who said, look, we don't want to do surgery, but it kind of is now your only option. I have done countless rehabilitation processes. I've done PRP therapy, which is lots of injections into my knee. I've had cortisone steroid shots into my knee. I kind of felt like I had done everything within my control to do. I'd stopped running, I'd stopped cycling, and by the end of it, I couldn't walk pain-free. And
yeah,
life is more than just running, and I can't afford to not be pain-free in day-to-day life. And yeah, you take with the good with the bad, and yes, there will be times when things are a bit sore, which is fine. But it got to the point that I couldn't take the dogs out for a walk, and I couldn't walk up the stairs properly and down the stairs. So Yeah, it was. So I'm now 3 weeks today post-op. And yeah, it's the scar is pretty
nasty.
Big.
It's not
keyhole surgery.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty nasty, but I'm fully weight bearing. I'm off crutches. I should be on the bike next week. So yeah, it's okay. I got given a Lego Land Rover Defender to build. There's got thousands and thousands of pieces. It's got 498 pages of the instruction manual.
I'd be game over.
I'm terrible at it. I'm 100 pages in after a day. So by the end of next week is the plan to do it, because I can't drive at the moment, which is the biggest frustration. I've just bought myself an old, not quite military, but an old Land Rover Defender, which I've
as a project.
As a project, but it still works, it still drives.
Yeah.
But I can't drive at the moment. So
you'll have to make do with a scooter.
Yeah, exactly. Electric scooter, quicker than crutches.
Yeah, I've seen it.
With an aero bike helmet, because every little helps. Yeah. It's class though. It's just got me out of the house.
Yeah.
I was just so frustrated that I couldn't do anything. I couldn't leave the house. If I was on my I can't drive anywhere. We're not where we live. Yeah, it's not in the middle of nowhere, but
yeah,
it's a mile to wherever you want to go, at least. So I'm not doing that on crutches.
No, that'll be hard work.
So get on an electric scooter and yeah.
So what's the time frame? So I had ACL reconstruction in.
Yeah.
I snapped my knee in Estonia on Okrabit. I had ACL reconstruction. End of March 2018,
yeah.
And the frustrating part for me was not being able to run. But I knew it was a process whereby I had to follow the rehab. Obviously, in the military, you know yourself is truly amazing. But what's your timeline from having the operation to hoping to take that anti-gravity treadmill first one run walk? Program. What's the time scale in months?
I think in months three.
Yeah.
I'm very good. As I was in the military, I will leave no stone unturned.
Yeah.
And I will do absolutely everything in my power to be as good as I possibly can be. And I love following process.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'm doing so much extra stuff. So whether it's like my nutrition, for example, has completely changed in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I don't need
extra calories. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need extra calories. I don't need carbohydrate, really.
Yeah.
Because I'm not using that much energy. So my overall intake, the total volume of food is probably the same, because I still have a big appetite.
Yeah.
But it's just all basically protein and fiber, because I want to rebuild muscle and I want to have that protein synthesis, and the fiber because it's just water retention, so you don't put weight on. To then having a sort of low level light laser therapy.
Yeah.
I've got a device here, and the supplements that I'm now taking and the infrared trousers that I'm wearing to get everything warm so things don't seize up. Like, I'd like to think I can do it pretty quickly. I am racing in March.
Which race is that?
Trans Gran Canaria. So 128K, 7,000 meters of climbing on the 4th of March.
Yeah.
And then I will race UTMB next year. And I have no doubt that will happen.
Yeah.
I truly believe, yeah, I honestly believe that this injury isn't a defining moment at all. Like, it's, geez, if you don't get injured, I don't say you should aspire to get injured, because it means you're pushing the boundaries, but I was very much flirting with my boundary and I went over it.
Yeah.
And as long as you can learn from the mistakes,
yeah,
then yeah, that's fine. And I think for me, it's yeah, as long as I can come out of this not necessarily stronger, because yes, do I think I will be stronger after this? Yes. Do I think will I lose fitness now? Yes. Can I get it back? Yes.
Yeah.
Like it's just a process, and it might be a long process, and that process, great writing it out on a bit of paper for months in advance, but as with the army, I didn't know what was happening tomorrow. And it's the same with the rehab. I might wake up and my knee, if it feels great tomorrow, then I might push the boat a bit,
yeah,
in the gym. But if it doesn't, then I'll back off a little bit. And I think having that sort of that flexibility and that adaptive mind state, I think is really important.
Yeah, sticking on the nutrition. So I'll hit one of the questions is, do you follow a specific diet like vegan or carnivore or anything like that?
Not really. I eat really well. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. Like my diet is, the foundation of my diet is fruit and veg.
Yeah.
So I am plant-based, but I eat meat.
Yeah, yeah.
And not much. I definitely don't eat as much as I used to, and that is a bit of an environmental reason. But at the same time, I want to be as good at my sport as I possibly can be. And yes, some people have done amazing things being vegan and being keto and all of these other diets. But actually, sometimes it's not that easy. Like, I've raced in Hong Kong, where there is no such thing as keto. There's no such thing as being vegan.
Yeah,
it doesn't work. And actually, yes, you can bring your own food, but actually if you're in a foreign country for 2 months, you've actually just kind of got to buy into what they eat, and you don't have that full control. So actually just being able to be really flexible and really adaptable, I think, is really important. I've worked with a couple of great nutritionists who help me plan, and something that I sort of did in lockdown is I got, I say good, much better at cooking.
Yeah.
Being one of the most institutionalized people that I know, going straight from school to the army.
Yeah.
And that was boarding school to Sandhurst to the mess. The first time I paid a bill, not including a mess bill, was in 2019.
Yeah.
Because I've had no need to, I've never had to, because I've been so caught up in the system, which has been great. And it was the same with cooking. I'd never had to really cook for myself, because I lived in the mess. And I didn't need to cook for myself. If I was cooking a ration pack, I'd cock that up. So why bother? Why bother doing anything else?
What was your favorite ration pack?
They're all pretty horrendous. I seem to remember like a chicken and mushroom pasta one was pretty good. But yeah, I was sort of only in with the nicer. I never had sort of the old school biscuit browns and things. I was a bit too much of a crow for that.
So what year did you join?
I joined in 2011.
So you would have done, when did you do PCD then?
I did PCD in 2012.
Yeah.
Going into winter 2012.
Was you I know you've only recently 2017 you come into the Ultra Game, but have you always been conscious of your diet, and have you always been as fit as you are?
Yeah, I think I look at it as I was very military fit. I come from a team sport background where I never was the best. I always wanted to be the best, but I never was technically the best, but I always tried the hardest. So I ended up being in the right place at the right time, but that was due to probably making a mistake and being in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So I then worked really hard to get into the right place. And so playing rugby for example, I would always make try saving tackles, and I would always get interceptions and charge downs because I just worked really hard.
Yeah.
And I was good at running, but I didn't really enjoy it.
Because it was forced upon us.
Yeah. And I want to be my mates who all play rugby. And then when I joined the army, the Welsh Guards, obviously a Welsh regiment, so a very rugby orientated regiment. And I was the only, in my first 2 years, I was the only officer playing for the battalion.
Yeah.
Which for me was a huge honor. So I did that. And I guess like to keep fit, I spent a lot of time in the gym. I then got really into CrossFit because I enjoyed the functionality side of it. And I think it goes really well with, certainly when I was leaving the army and more in the process of doing my running, there was far more of a CrossFit style of PT in the army than the very old fashioned press ups, sit ups and running. And I'm sure there still is that to a certain extent, but I think it has got much better. And I think that generalist training, there's a guy you probably heard of called Ross Edgley.
Yeah.
Who speaks Swam. A lot. Yeah. Yeah. Swimmer, but also a bodybuilder and is massive, but swam around the coast of Great Britain.
Yeah.
He speaks about sort of general preparedness training, which is just completely non-specific training, which is what I think has made me a good ultra endurance athlete, is because I have done foundation training from when I was young.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing the specificity. I'm specializing in something, but I've already got all of those foundations, those building blocks that actually just a little bit of specific training, then you can really excel.
Yeah. So you said about PCD in 2012, I was on senior Brecon at the same time. One of the questions is, what was your Brecon 2 miler time?
Oh, I don't know. I was just never like, I assume I would be very surprised if I didn't win.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what it was. I'm so unobsessed with, and especially when I was now slightly more so obsessed with it, but in the army, I was so obsessed with timings. Like I ran PFT, I did a sub 7 minute PFT.
Yeah.
Which people are like, oh, you must have gone the wrong way. I'm like, well, no, this is the way that I went. No, it's wrong. But I was better. People would say, oh, you're quick, so you must be terrible with weight.
Yeah.
I was better with weight. Which is what I think sort of multi-stage racing, I think I'm quite good at, because I'm still pretty efficient at carrying. Yeah, it might not be particularly heavy, but it's with 7 or 8 kilos that you're carrying that I'm pretty used to and conditioned. And actually, if I want to do it again, I would need to do a little bit of specific training, but not too much.
Was the catalyst for change? So when you joined the military, obviously, we know military is a career, 22 years. Were you signed up for that? Was that the mindset you joined the military with, or was it get in and then use it as a stepping stone? Was MDS a catalyst for you to go, hold on, I could make something new?
Yeah, MDS was, but that definitely wasn't the plan. I think when I joined, at 18, so went straight from school to Sandhurst, and which was pretty rare. Most officers had been to university and then Sandhurst. So I was young, which just meant I had time, which then meant that I was a platoon commander for 7 years.
Yeah.
And my view and my view when I was going through the army was, I will keep doing this until I stop enjoying it, or until I get told that I have to do a job that I don't really want to do. And I was so fortunate to be able to platoon command for such a long time, because that's what I was interested in. I loved it. I loved being able to spend time with the boys, and I felt like you could actually make a real difference. Whereas I spent a couple of weeks as a stand-in to company second in command, and I absolutely hated it.
Knees to chest.
It was just you just couldn't make any difference at all because you were just being spammed left, right, and center.
Yeah.
With crap taskings, and you were just constantly letting people down. Whereas actually, as a platoon commander, you had a little bit more of a say, and you could mug some things off that you didn't have to do. And yeah, you'd probably get in trouble for it at some point.
Yeah.
But actually, it's for the best of your blokes, and
you could manage your men a bit better.
Precisely, and you could fight the fires for them. Whereas for me, it was you take any step higher, and it's just you end up just messing people around. So. Had I not started running, do I still think I'd be in the army? No.
Was it really for a bet?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Amazing. I think it really sums me up. Like, I'm so not fiercely competitive, but I'm so competitive, and I get really into things really quickly.
Yeah.
So if I decided tomorrow that, oh, I really like cricket, for example, I would become obsessed.
Yeah.
And I'd probably spend a year or two being really obsessed. And then I'd find something else that I liked. And for me, running has always been in the back of my mind of something that I've always, when I'm doing it, I've always loved it.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I said, oh, I bet I could beat you, it was I'm so stubborn and competitive that now I've said it, I need to do it.
Yeah.
It was a pretty crazy time. And I nearly ended up not being able to go on Marathon des Sables because we failed an exercise that we then had to do an extra day in some simulators in Salisbury Plain.
Yeah.
Sat in a simulator, and my commanding officer said, no, you're not allowed to go.
Imagine like not going. Imagine what
he's been 2 days before. So the week before I did Marathon des Sables, I was sat in a simulator on Salisbury Plain. Where and all the people that I was racing against were
out
preparing
there
properly. Yeah. I was eating ration packs.
Do you know Guest Davis?
In the Welsh Guards, there'll be a lot of
Guest Davis. Roy Welsh. I'm sure he'd done Marathon des Sables around about that time.
No,
he's the one that's climbed Everest.
Big guy.
No, he's quite a slight guy. He's a Roy Welsh. He's the youngest Welsh guy to climb Everest.
Okay, no, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd done it around the same time as you, to be fair.
Okay, yeah. It's a very military thing. There were quite a few RDG guys who did it when I did it. And I did it for Walking with the Wounded. It's such a cool race in jets.
Well, Glenn that runs Vet I Run with me, he's obviously signed up to it. It's been delayed and delayed and delayed. He's doing it for Walking with the Wounded as well. Yeah. He's a veteran himself.
Yeah.
I take it at this point then, Tom, you're self-coached. Obviously, you've taken a bet. Have you hired a coach, or you just gone off a training plan that you've conducted yourself?
At this point, I was... If I had an hour, I'd run for an hour.
Yeah.
If I had 2 hours, I'd run for 2 hours. And if the boy... If I was writing our platoon PT program, so there was probably a bit more running for our platoon than anyone else's because I wanted to run. But I might do, if we were doing an hour easy run, I might do half an hour before, half an hour afterwards as well.
What was your weekly mileage?
I tend to run pretty high mileage. I sit... And I have always sat really comfortably since I started running. I've just sat really comfortably, sort of between 80 and put it at this point, sort of 80 miles a week.
That must have been like to put that into context in a normal job, 80 miles a week is hard to fit in. But in the military, especially when you're on like exercise, you're doing courses, you're managing men, that must have been hard work.
It was really hard. And I think what I found, and sort of my ultimate reason for leaving the army with running, was I just didn't have the consistency. Some weeks would be really good and I'd run 80, 90, 100 miles. Yeah. Other weeks run 10, 15, 20 miles.
You just can't compete then, can you?
No. And like, and even some days, like you had a big workout planned and something happened and you ended up having to go to Colchester to go to Cork for the day. You didn't know if you're going to have to stay overnight. So you brought all your running kit and you're just waiting about all day and you ended up not having lunch. So then you ended up not running because you've not eaten since breakfast. And then you're in the car and you don't get back until 10 at night. And then you've got to hand your car in the morning. Like things just, there was just no consistency. And you're just constantly being not messed about because it's some, a lot of the time it's not actually anyone's fault. It's just, this is the pace that things move.
Yeah, it's work. Yeah.
The nature of the beast. And, but it's not, it doesn't work with being a professional athlete or trying to be as good as you possibly can in one area, because for that, you have to be really focused and be really dedicated and with all the best intentions you can't. And also, like, for me, I would find that we'd go to the sergeant's mess or for the Christmas, around Christmas time, that you want to be a part of everything that's going on. But at the same time, you're like, right, well,
I want to train.
I've got a 3-hour run tomorrow morning and I should be running now. So
yeah.
I ended up having to make lots of sacrifices that in a family regiment like the Welsh Guards, it wasn't frowned upon because people knew what I was doing, but
yeah.
I felt like I was missing out a lot. So for me, like I said earlier, I'm very much an all or nothing person. And
yeah.
In order to be as good as I possibly could be, I needed to solely concentrate.
Because didn't they at some point, Welsh Guards, like, when did you make the concerted decision to go, right, I'm going pro? Because didn't they allow you to go away and race for a bit or give you a bit of leeway once you said, right, I'm looking to turn pro? What point was that? What race?
Geez, the army was okay. But the Welsh Guards were incredible.
Yeah.
I was told that if I medaled at the Trail Running World Championships, that I would be able to not have a job in the army.
Yeah, but still be in the army. Yeah.
But because ultra running and trail running is not an Olympic sport and not recognized by the army, it's a hobby, I wasn't allowed to be put on a elite athlete pit.
Program, yeah.
Precisely. So basically what I had to do is I had to have a job. My name had to be next to the title pit, of the job. Yeah. But I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But because I was the spare officer, when the battalion were busy, I ended up having to do some things,
yeah,
which it makes me sound a bit ungrateful. It was probably
no, because if you look at other sports, the like you said there, the professional sports, like if you're rugby, if you're boxing, if you're football, you're away, you're a tracksuit, you're representing battalion, to be then called back from your training. I can see the frustrations there. 100%.
You just couldn't get the consistency, but it was amazing. It gave me real insight. But yeah, there were times when I would be on a training camp in the US and I'd get a message from my adjutant saying, you need to do these reports and they need to be in 6 days' time. And I'm like, well, I can't because I'm not here. You said I can go away. And he's like, right, well, I'll give you a week-long extension, but then they have to be done. So you end up, you're panicking for your last couple of weeks, and it just wasn't really conducive. But having said that, the support was incredible, and still is now. Like, I get a lot of messages from soldiers, some who are still serving, some who have left in the Welsh Guards.
I think you'll always be that, Tom. I think it's like when I come across you, obviously we're both Welsh regiments. You'll always be that. Tom was Welsh Guards. So I think everybody that mentions you knows that, like, yeah, you were formerly Welsh Guards. Now you're a pro athlete. Like, Even Chris Rees stated, he said, tell him I managed to keep up with him for the first 50 metres of a PFA.
I'm not sure about that.
And somebody said, yeah, I don't believe you one bit.
No.
But yeah, I think you'll always be that that soldier, and then obviously recognise that. Was it Western Sits? Was the day before or day after that you actually left the army?
It was the day after. So I left on the officially left on the 31st of June.
Yeah.
And then Western States was the 1st of July.
That is mad.
Having said that, my last 6 months in the army, I was in Ethiopia for 3 months. My last 6 months, I did very, very little.
Yeah, because I take it this time, you were signed with Red Bull then anyway, were you? Or?
Yeah, I was signed with Red Bull, signed with Adidas. So it was it's a fine line of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do.
Yeah.
In the army's eyes, you are working for the army 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you cannot be paid by anyone else during the army's time.
Yeah.
So as a sponsored contracted athlete, I was being paid at the same time.
Yeah.
As I was on the army's time.
Yeah.
So it was
conflict of interest.
Yeah, slightly blowing the line. So, but yeah, once it was decided, right, I'm leaving, I managed to get early release. I didn't want to do any courses really, because probably a little bit short sighted. I was like, I want to be a runner.
Yeah.
I want to be a professional athlete. I can't really bother to do courses. I've got all the qualifications that I need. And
yeah,
I just wanted to train. So I trained instead of doing, courses. But I could use training camps as part, because that was, I was almost doing an apprenticeship for my trade.
Yeah.
So they were fantastic, and they probably knew that I was trying to pull the wool, but they were just like, well, you're leaving anyway. We're not going to get any value out of you now, so we might as well just let you crack on.
Yeah. Before I come on to the questions from the guys, Tom, I just want to highlight, I think, what everybody's thinking in regards to when I said I was speaking to you, is the versatility you've shown from stepping into the Ultra game, and then I watched you race that 5K. The carryover of speed, and then to be entered into and run a 63, was it, in the World Champions half marathon? Like, where does that come from? So, like, most people just specialize in one area in regards to if they're a 50K specialist or 50 mile or 1500, they'll stick to that. But to come from that to then be selected for the World Championships half marathons and running a 13 minute 5K, like, what sort of training are you putting in there?
I think just going back to the sort of generalist training, I think I have just trained my body really well, that I then adapt so easily to, or not easily,
yeah,
it's hard training. I adapt quickly to what I'm training for. So if I decided that, right, I want to run a sub 4 minute mile, I think with 6 weeks of training, I could probably do that.
Yeah.
Or if I decided, right, I want to run 100 miles, I think I'd probably need maybe a little bit longer, maybe 8 to 10 weeks-ish. And yeah, I'd be able to do it. So, and I think that's a little bit of quite a lot of genetics of allowing me to do that. Like, I will never be the best shorter distance runner, but I can be good. Like,
yeah,
run 13:41, which probably puts me top 10 in the UK, yeah, maybe top 15 in the UK at the moment.
Yeah.
I loved it. Like, it was great fun, and to be able to represent Great Britain at the half marathon world championships is great, and being an ultra running specialist. But like, at the end of the day, I see it as running. It's running. Like,
yeah,
you've got good form or you don't.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot to improve that.
Yeah.
And I think it's too many people, a lot of the time, too many people look for the marginal gains, for the 1%ers, for the 2%ers, but actually there's a lot that you could change that wouldn't be a 1% or a 2%, it would be a 10%.
Yeah.
And I think what I've done really well over the years is sort of get those big gains to be made streamlined. So the foundation is much better. So then when I want to do a race, I can train really, I can afford to train really specifically for
Shorter blocks, because like, you're already, you're ready. It's like you said, if you wanted to do a 5K, you can go, right, I can train for a couple of weeks and you're ready for that anyway. Yeah,
exactly. And it's just training, it's just being smart with it. Like, you don't train for something that you're not doing.
Yeah.
Like, if I was training for 100 miler, would I be doing max intensity hill reps? No.
Yeah.
Because it's pointless. But some people think that you have to work really, 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 really hard in training and you have to be sick and all of these things. Like, that's just, as an endurance runner, no, that literally couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you will be tired the whole time and you will live on caffeine, but you should never feel so, you should always feel like you could do another set or like you could do another 10 minutes of running.
Yeah, and get up and do it again the next day. Like,
until race day, because consistency is the key. And if you're not consistent, then you can't perform. And I mean, it's the same with the army. Like, you see, the good soldiers are typically good at everything.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that then end up progressing and doing better. And they've just got a really good foundation. Like, I'm using the military phrase, basics done well.
Yeah.
Like, that is quite literally it. Running.
Yeah.
If you break it down into the simplest terms, you are moving one foot in front of the other as quickly as you can for a certain distance.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
There are a lot of basic skills that you can do in order to maximize your chances of being as good as you can be. And that's just what I've tried to do. I don't do anything particularly fancy. I just work bloody hard on basic things. My nutrition is really good. My sleep is really good. My training is good.
Yeah.
I do the little things outside of training that are my one percenters. Yeah. The majority of it is just basic training, basic eating, basic sleeping. I don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah. And I think that sort of makes it easier to stick to if you stick to the basics and make it simple.
100%. Yeah. You try and make it all complicated and it can sound great. But it then gets really confusing and really complicated. And like, I've not got time for this.
Right, let's get on to the question board. So, Sean Molino.
Yeah.
What's your greatest achievement and why?
Very good question. I think my greatest, we keep on running. My greatest running achievement is, I think Marathon des Sables. For me, it was proving to myself and I think to other people what is possible if you work hard.
Yeah.
Yes, there's genetics involved, but it's, Marathon des Sables is a pure endurance race where the definition of endure is a long time being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Which is what the army is, which is what Marathon des Sables is. And for me to be able to finish on the podium is still incredibly surreal. I still, when I see pictures of me doing it, I'm like, I almost can't remember doing it.
It's
so mad. And it's one of the races that I am really, really excited about going back to and trying to better. I'm sure I can better because I am a different athlete now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely on there.
Mega. So I think that links in next perfectly to the next question. So a couple of people asked the same question in and about the same way, but they worded it different. So sticking with that, how do you cope with things when things get tough, like a mindset? Have you got any mantras you say to yourself or do? Or
so I think with everything, one of the first things that you need to do is to accept it. I know I can look at my training program, or I can look at a race, I can almost pinpoint where it's going to hurt and where it's going to get tough. And you can do the same thing if you're on exercise. Right, day one of no sleep, day, night one of no sleep, fine. Night two, miserable. You know it's going to start hurting there. And it's the same when I'm running. So I get to, let's say, a certain race, a certain climb in a certain race. Like, right, I know this is going to hurt.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to be feeling sorry for myself. And then actually, then when it happens, I've accepted that it's going to happen. I'm like, right, well, it's here now. You knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So you've just got to deal with it. And like, I used to get a little bit anxious on start lines. And I guess it was a bit of what people would overcomplicate and call imposter syndrome, where I just basically felt like I didn't belong because I had done a couple of races and that was it. Whereas actually I've got as much right to be there as anyone else. And as anyone, if you put the hard work in, if you put the hard graft in, then you deserve to be there. And it's only yourself who can be the judge of that. And you can't measure yourself against other people because you don't know what they've done. They don't know what you've done. Let the legs do the talking rather than everything that's going on around you. And I trust everyone around me. I am not the best nutritionist. I am not the best coach. I am not the best strength and conditioning instructor. So what I have done is I have gone to the people who I think are the best. And by that, I mean the people who are the best for me.
Yeah.
And I've started working with them so I can be as good as I possibly can be. And I'm not being afraid to ask for help. And I think that then really helps mentally that actually I've got other people who I'm not necessarily holding accountable for when things get tough. But actually when things are getting tough, these people have put everything
invested.
This should work. This will work.
Yeah.
So stop feeling sorry for yourself. Keep going. Just don't stop, because every step you take, you're getting close to the finish line. And imagine how crap it's going to feel 10 minutes after a race where you've not achieved what you wanted to achieve, or you've DNF'd or something. Yeah. Because you're the only person who's got to deal with it 10 minutes after.
Yeah. That's like a light switch going off in my head. That resonates so true with me, what you said there. Like when I was, I've done many ultras, but I've never like trained seriously or been coached or done anything. Like I've just completed rather than competing. And when I was like, oh, I'm going to be a semi-serious runner, I was like, right, what's the goal everybody aims for? Is sub-3-hour marathon flood, right? I'll go for that. But everybody talked about hitting the wall at 20 miles, 32K. And for me, when I tried it first, it didn't come. But then when at 35, I hit the wall, I wasn't expecting it. And it sort of threw me out. And I run 3:01. But then when I went back the next time, I was like, there is no way that wall is going to beat me at 35K. It said, like you just said there, I knew it was going to come and I was ready for it. So then I run 2:57. So like that was a light switch moment there. This resonated with me too. It's like, I knew it was coming. I was expecting it.
Yeah. And I think it's so important because you can be afraid of these things. I look at it in a very military way, and look at, there was something, I'm probably going to get this all wrong, but like a risk register.
Yeah.
And with a risk, what do you do when you're a risk? Do you accept the risk or do you reject the risk or what you do? And I say it's the same with this. Like, you've got to accept it. And if you don't accept it, if you're going to reject the pain, then find something else, because these things are going to hurt.
Yeah.
Not hurt as in you need to get injured.
Yeah.
But mentally it's going to be really tough, not just during the race but in the training, because you're going to end up making a lot of sacrifices. And then when you get onto the race, and if you think, oh, this is actually getting a bit too tough, I'm going to quit now, so we'll think about all the hard sacrifice, all the early mornings, all the late nights, all the missed birthday parties, the times that you've pissed off your missus and things.
All the early mornings.
Exactly. So it's you're the only person who can make yourself do it.
Mega.
And believing in that is key.
Mega. Nutrition. What's your post race, pre race, during race, and pre race, post race, and during?
So pre race, really basic. I cut all fiber and caffeine out of my diet about a week before.
Is that to get the effect of? Do you use caffeine in the race then?
Yeah. Yeah, and I swear by caffeine. I find it so difficult coming off caffeine. Not because of the caffeine kick itself, but just of the process of making a coffee in the morning, like, and the taste. So I'll end up drinking decaf, which tastes exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I then cut all fiber out. What fiber does, it just stays in your stomach. It's water retention. So one, you drop a little bit of weight that's just water retention. Two, it just reduces the risk of having anything in your stomach. So you're not going to, hopefully you're not going to get any GI issues. So it's not particularly healthy because I don't eat fruit and veg the week of a race.
Right.
So I take more supplements. I take more sort of multivitamins to make sure I'm still getting the benefit of fruits and vegetables, but just without the load and without the volume. During race, it really depends on the race and it really depends on how I'm feeling, but a real mixture of real food, gels, sports drink. I'll start using caffeine. Normally I'll have caffeine at the beginning of a race, just before we start. And then I'll sort of keep drip feeding through until I really start to get tired, and I'll just start smashing the caffeine, because actually your body can absorb so much. And if you've got a good stomach and you're able to tolerate it, then that's fine. And a lot of people ask, do I actually drink Red Bull? Yes, I wouldn't advertise something that I didn't use. For me, Red Bull is the equivalent of a caffeinated gel. It is quick release sugar and caffeine, which as an endurance athlete or anyone who is doing something that is putting themselves through pressure and it's hard and they need extra energy or extra focus, and actually come the end of a race is when I need the most focus, because you're the most tired, but that's when you've really got to concentrate. So you don't go the wrong way. You keep picking your feet up so you don't fall over and bang something on the way down your final hill. Post-race, a little bit different. Post-training, I'll have something pretty much straight away. I normally don't have a particularly good appetite after a hard training session. So it'll be liquid, and I try and eat as much real food as I can. So if it's a recovery shake, but made up sort of as a smoothie, so maybe with milk, banana, natural yogurt, some honey, some peanut butter. If I'm feeling not very lazy, but if I have a hard session, I'm feeling lazy, or I've driven to training, then I'll just have a protein shake recovery in the car. But post race, I'll eat whatever I want. You can't take life too seriously.
No.
And if you can't be at the top of the mountain the whole time, and actually the psychological benefit of eating the things that you actually really want to eat is great. And actually going back to the nutrition point of doing more cooking during lockdown, I used to see food as nutrition, whereas now I see food as food, because I can now eat really tasty food that is still hitting all of my nutrition goals.
Yeah.
And it's not just eating broccoli, rice and chicken.
Yeah.
Which sometimes needs to happen, but a lot of the time I'd rather eat nice tasting food that I've enjoyed cooking and I then get to enjoy eating.
When you talk about nutrition through the race, have you got a staple that you always go to, like a favorite brand of gel or a favorite food, like a peanut butter sandwich or something that you always go to that you know is going to work for you? And what's your favorite type of brand?
So hard food, I like mashed sweet potato in a wrap. Sorry, dogs are barking again.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mashed sweet potato in a wrap with some salt and pepper. I think that's, for me, it works really well. It's purely just carbohydrate, which is great. Gels-wise, geez, I really like to mix it up. I've used a lot of Morton. I think Morton's been really good, but I started using sort of SIS beta fuel gels that sort of pack a bit of a punch. Like I'm already carrying water, so they don't need to be watery. So I'd rather get more carbohydrate in them. So I'm probably looking at more like a sort of 30 to 40 grams of carbohydrate per gel, whereas a normal gel is only 25 grams of carbohydrate.
Yeah.
it doesn't seem like that much of a difference, but when you're trying to consume somewhere between 1 and 1.5 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight.
Yeah.
So if you weigh 70 kilos, you're trying to take between 60 and 80 grams of carbs per hour. If you've got a 40 gram gel or 40 grams of carbohydrate gel or a 25 grams of carbohydrate gel, you're going to need to carry significantly less 40 gram gels. Yeah. So it all comes into a bit of that. And as long as you've got a good stomach and your stomach is able to tolerate that much carbohydrate going into your body at once, then you're on to a winner. And that's that you train. I train to eat on the move. Because the majority of DNFs happen and the majority of bad performances happen because of stomach issues.
Yeah.
So people who neglect it, people who ask, oh, I've got a race next week, what should I eat during it? It's like, well, if you don't know,
too late. Yeah.
Know now what you're going to eat, it's too late. You too need late. To be 2 months out, you need to know roughly what you're going to have. May not know the exact gel or the exact brand, but you need to be training, taking on food.
Sorted. Right, Glenn wants to know, obviously you're sponsored by Adidas, but what brand did you use before? Were you Adidas before, or were you?
A real mixture. I signed with Hoka for a year and really liked the shoes. I thought they were really good. And it was a really fun brand to work with. But I had always, growing up through school, through the army, I'd always worn Adidas. And when the opportunity arose, and the vision of where Adidas Terex wanted to go and to really be involved in the R&D of products and to be able to have custom products made for me, I can then give the insights and then these shoes, these packs and things come to light. It's been such a fun journey. And I've signed with Adidas for the next 4 years. There's some really exciting stuff coming, which... yeah, I'm so thankful for, and supported me through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And literally just before this call, had a WhatsApp from my athlete manager in Germany, Adidas, just checking up, making sure I'm okay mentally and physically. So that's awesome. They're the sort of people that you want to work with. And we speak a lot about who do you want in your corner. And for me, it is getting a big check twice a year worth it? Well, yes, it's good because it allows me to keep being an athlete, but would I take it if I was going to have a poor service and a poor relationship? No, I wouldn't, because I'd much rather take less but have a good relationship and a future rather than just be solely focused around the money. But you're a professional athlete, you need to live. I'm incredibly fortunate. All of my partners have just been superb through COVID and into this year now with my injury. And it's really, you feel really well looked after, which is what you want.
Last couple of questions, Tom. I appreciate they've taken up a bit of your time. Is bucket list races, is there any races that you haven't done that you'd like to do?
So I've raced CCC at UTMB twice. And I'm, next year, I'm planning on doing UTMB. So that's a definite bucket list. Trans Gran Canaria, which I'll also do next year. And then I guess sort of the two other key ones, the Hard Rock that I really want to do. And then a bit of a curveball. At some point, I want to do the Barclay Marathon.
I see now with John Kelly this time.
I think it's such a military event. It's navigation, which I get banter about not being able to do because I'm an officer. I reckon I would have been the designated map reader in the recce. It's one thing that I can do. I wasn't very good at many things in the army, but reading a map was one of them.
Would you go out and do the comrades?
I'd love to at some point.
I got out and done that in 2009.
Oh, amazing. What did you think?
It was massive. It's the world's biggest ultramarathon, isn't it? Yeah. I got to meet Bruce Fordyce as well, which was amazing. It's a huge crowd.
Yeah, oh, it's massive.
But yeah, it's a brilliant race, beautiful race.
I was planning on doing it last year. It was got cancelled and then moved to this year, but then this year has also been cancelled. So yes, I'd like to do it, but what really interests me is the trails and all the ultras on the trails. So
yeah.
It'll be nice to have, but not so much. It's also, it's a non-drugs tested race. And I feel incredibly strongly about doping in sport. And I don't really want to be a part of any races that haven't got a thorough anti-doping policy.
Yeah. And finally, to wrap things up, Tom, if you were to go back to yourself before you started taking running a little bit more serious, what advice would you give yourself?
I think I do take myself seriously. When I'm in blocks of training, like I said earlier, I do become obsessed. I get such big tunnel vision. And I think my main advice would be to find something early that you can switch off from running and do that thing, whether it's making coffee or we've got chickens now, we've got two dogs. I'm doing up a Defender. We bought a house last year.
Like
it's all of these things that I thought, oh, in order to be an athlete, you should know, go to train as much as you can. But actually for me, having these other things in my life has been arguably even more important, as it's helped to keep me sane and to help to keep me motivated, knowing that actually if something goes wrong, if I have a bad run session, then actually it's not the end of the world. There'll be another one tomorrow. And I can just come back home. I can chill out. I can enjoy sort of time with my family. That's Sophie, my fiance, and the dogs, chickens, and the cars. And yeah, I think, yeah, that would be my biggest bit of advice to myself.
Perfect. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Especially,
just looking at your mindset and the way you approach things and how you transition as well from the military. But thanks for coming on, and I wish you all the best in the recovery, and hopefully you'll make the race in March.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for having me, and hope to see you out on the trails soon.